This is Audible.
Audible Originals presents Girls and Boys, written by Dennis Kelly, performed by Carey Mulligan, directed by Lindsay Turner.
I met my husband in the queue to board an EasyJet flight, and I have to say I took an instant dislike to the man. This was in Italy. I'd been travelling. Not with any real sense of purpose or see the world, but more because I didn't know what the fuck I was doing with my life and I just could not face getting another job I hated back home. So I handed in my notice. Took my last month's pay along with a deposit I got back from my flat, a brand spanking new credit card, and I stuck a pin in a map of the world, determined to go wherever it landed, be it Paris, Calcutta, New York, or Dubai. I got Southampton. An entire planet to choose from, and I got Southampton. But I thought, fate, follow fate, this could be the start of the rest of my life, which is how I found myself in Southampton. For 3 days. After which time I thought, fuck you, fate, and got on a train to Paris. Paris is a dump. I'm sorry, it is. And it's time we all start talking about this. France is beautiful. I've been all over France and it is something, but Paris, call that a world city. It's Leeds with wider streets. I really, really, really was not on the lookout for someone. You see, the travelling phase of my life had followed hot on the heels of what I now refer to as my drinky, druggy, slaggy phase. And I mean slaggy, by the way, not slutty. It was not some kind of Sex in the City shag fest that you could gossip with your gay pals about. It was dirty, messy and slaggy. I've been with the same bloke for 4 years. 6 months of passion, followed by 6 months of warm bickering, followed by 3 years of a slow decline into sub-zero tedium. And when we finally took it out of the back and shot it in the head, there was blood, mess, tears and recriminations for, well, months, actually. It was not nice. But at that point, I realised I was 25 and I'd had exactly 3 sexual partners in my entire life. The first for one night, the second for 6 months, and the last for 4 years. So I put all this information onto a spreadsheet and was shocked to discover that on current trends, I'd be with the next guy for 326 years. I decided to go a different way. I had fun. Drink, drugs, a fair amount of cocaine and different partners. It was fun and a laugh and also destructive and slightly depressing and oddly callous and upsetting. As well as energising, confusing. It was confusing. The end of it came while I was having extremely drunk doggy-style sex with my flatmate on this grimy suicide beige carpet in our flat and, of all places, wood green. We developed this unhealthy let's not have a relationship but fuck went drunk enough thing, and at this moment I was so drunk that I'd just thrown up and we were still doing it. I mean, I'd just puked. The sick was right there. I just followed it up on the carpet and the force of the thrusting is kind of nudging me towards it. Towards this puddle of puke. And I remember thinking, if he doesn't come soon, he's going to fuck me right into that puddle of puke. That exact thought, that exact sentence materialized in my brain. Let me repeat it for you. If he doesn't come soon, he's going to fuck me right into that puddle of puke. Let me tell you something. When a sentence like that appears in your life, you know it's time to start looking at your choices. That was the end of my drinky, druggy, slaggy phase. I quit my job, took my cash, and went to Europe. So I'm queuing, and this is an EasyJet flight, and it's been delayed, and they're not saying anything, so everyone in this queue is just standing there quietly hating anything within our hate radius. And this is in Italy. And let me be clear, I love Italians. Italians are great, Italy is great, but Italians do not like queuing. Italians have an extremely lax attitude to the whole concept of the queue in general. And this wasn't just Italy, this was Naples. And I fucking love Naples. Naples is incredible, but if Italians don't respect the queue, then Neapolitans outright despise the queue. Neapolitans have a complicated relationship to rules. It's part of their charm. So, for example, everywhere else in the world, a red light means stop. But in Naples, a red light means stop. So needless to say, this queue is tense. Everyone is on edge, waiting for the cut-ins. Everyone is looking daggers at everyone else like, is that guy moving up? Is he fucking sneaking up? Or I swear to Christ, If that old bitch tries to cut in, I will drop her and stomp on her neck. But by some miracle, the integrity of the queue is staying intact. We are queuing. It has not become the last helicopter out of Saigon that we all know at any moment it could turn into. But this guy in front of me, I mean, he's just standing there, not a care in the world, reading a fucking book, head lost in it, casually shunting his bag forward with his foot every so often taking his own sweet, allowing a gap to open up. I mean, a gap? Here in this queue? And I'm just fuming. I mean, you moron, you idiot, you thick-brained, large-synapsed cockhead. Do you not get what's going on here? Do you not know what it is taking for these people to keep this queue together? They are fighting every instinct in their bodies and are somehow winning, and here you are just letting gaps open up. Gaps. And then these two models. I mean, they had to be models. They were gorgeous. These girls, God knows what they were doing here. Must have had a flight suddenly cancelled because they were looking around and thinking, where are we? I don't like it. Where's the VIP lounge? And you know when you see proper expensive clothes, but proper expensive, and the hair and the groom, and it was like being visited from another dimension. I swear people were taking photos. And they go straight up to this guy, idiot face. They go right up to idiot face, and the brunette goes, hi there, how are you? And he looks up and he's like, huh? What? I mean, he doesn't say that. He doesn't say anything. He's just staring with his mouth open like Scooby fucking Doo, because no one of this genus has ever spoken to him before. And he actually looks slightly scared, like he's thinking, what is this? What's happening to me? Is it okay if we talk to you for a bit? This is the blonde. Excuse me, what, me? Yeah, we just want to stay here with you and chat for a bit. Here. And suddenly I get it and I'm thinking, oh no, 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 you bitch. You conniving, long-legged, no, 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 no. But this guy, this idiot, this moron, he's already done. He's dead. He's finished. He is prey. I mean, they are shining. It's as if they've already been airbrushed before stepping into life. You want to stand here and talk to me? Wheels clunking into place in his skull like he knows no words and language has never actually cluttered his mouth before this second. Yeah, is that okay? And she pulls out this smile, and I swear to Christ, if she threw that smile, it could cut heads off statues. The sound of harps accompany that smile. And I'm actually admiring her a bit, though I'm not, because I want to cut her into tiny pieces and feed her to an anteater. And he's just like, well, of course. Brilliant. Brilliant. Just, but I get to sleep with one of you, right? Hold on. Hold the fuck on. Excuse me? I get to sleep with one of you. I mean, that is what's going on here. Because otherwise there really is no point to me letting you cut into this queue in front of all these good people who've been patiently waiting for the last hour and 15 minutes to board this plane and who want to get on it every bit as much as you do, is there? And suddenly I realise that this creepy little slack-jawed simpleton is actually a genius with the physique of a Greek god. And the blonde is just staring stunned. This does not compute. Not this. Not from a normal. And the brunette is sort of horrified, almost in shock, so much so, in fact, that she then says the most funniest thing that I've ever heard anyone say in my entire life ever. She says, but we're models. It just came out like a silent thought that suddenly wanders into your mouth without permission, and my day has flipped. This is a great day. This is a lovely day. They will write songs about this day. And fucking Odysseus here does not miss a beat. He smiles sweet as beetroot and says, well, you'll still be models at the back of the queue. Blondie suddenly pipes up. She's not having this. Look, there's no need to be rude. We were just trying to be friendly. No, you weren't. What you were doing was the opposite of friendly. You were hoping I'd fall for you so you could get something you wanted. And the moment we got on that plane, you would have abandoned me and I would have felt shitty about myself. What you were doing wasn't being friendly. It was being, well, excuse me, but you were being bitches. And now people are listening. Some are even laughing, and it's been translated to others, and even in translation it's funny, because, let's face it, no one really likes the gorgeous. And these girls, well, they're sensing it. The first few moments of revolution, the peasants mumbling about freedom, the apes learning speech. The brunette decides this has gone far enough, so she leans in and goes, oh, and by the way, we would never, ever sleep with you. Ever. Okay? And I think this has actually got him. Because, well, it's true. He's looking at something that some part of him has to want And what they're saying is no. Not now, not ever. You will never, ever touch anything like this, ever. And something in him changes, and when he speaks, it's with a softer voice. More delicate, no charm. Just honesty. No. No, you wouldn't. And I know you wouldn't. But it is my firm belief that the act of making love is the highest expression of our humanity. It is a union of two souls. It is a celebration. This is verbatim, by the way. This is exactly what he said. Of our love of being alive. But in you, I do not see that love. I do not see that spark of life. I really don't. Therefore, sex with you would be an act of necrophilia. It would be like wanking into a pretty dress. Bit harsh, that last bit. But tell me you don't just love him a little bit. What's that? Mud? A bucket of mud? And where are you going with a bucket of mud? No, young lady, you're not coming into the house with a bucket of mud. Because it's a bucket of mud. I don't care if you've got a plastic sheet down. You are not coming into my house with a big bucket of wet... Yeah, it is my house, and you're not coming in with that because it's going to get everywhere, isn't it? And where are you going to take it anyway? Right, well, first off, the shard made of mud does sound fantastic, and I would like to see that. But secondly, you are not taking a bucket of mud into your bedroom. That is never going to happen. So go outside, please. You can do it in the garden. What? Well, you don't have planning permission to do it in your bedroom either, do you? So come on, out. That's it, out. Go on, you could... Hey, what did you say? Come back here. What did you... Oh, Danny. Oh, no, no, no. Danny, what are you doing? You're supposed to eat it, not wear it. I'm going to have to clean... Why don't you just put it in your mouth, for God's sake? You put everything else in your bloody mouth. Why can't you just... It's not funny. Don't laugh, you little... I'm cleaning this. Yeah, I'm scolding you. This is scolding. The least you can do is not laugh at me when I'm... All right, that's enough. Christ's sake, not the floor. Your mouth. Put it in your... Oh, no, Leanne. I said no. What do you mean it's different? It's the same bucket with the same mud in it. I can see it. Right, it looks the same to me, and it doesn't matter because it's still mud. Yes, it is. I can see it's mud. Well, wet earth with water in it is still mud, young lady, and you are not bringing it in here. And excuse me, but what did you just say to me before you went out? I haven't forgotten that. What did you say? What did you say? Leanne, what did you say? Right. Well, I think you did say something, and I'm going to tell your dad when he gets home, and I don't think you're going to be going to the city farm this afternoon, do you? Well, I'm going to tell him. Well, I am. Leanne, that is enough. You are making me very angry now. No, I'm not always angry. I'm just angry when you act like a little... Don't you dare say that to me. Don't you dare. Come here. I said, come here. Danny. Oh, for Christ's sake, what in your mouth? In your fucking mouth? No, all right. Sorry. Shh, come on. I'm sorry. Yeah, I know. Mummy's horrible, I know. I'm sorry, darling. Let's get Buggy. You want Buggy? Here you go. Here's Buggy. Have Buggy. Oh, I know. I'm a terrible mother. I'm evil. I am. I'm the worst mother in the world. I know. Well, do you have something you want to say to me? Yeah. Well, it's very hurtful when you say things like that, you know. I know, but you're getting to be a big girl now, so you need to think about what you're saying. Yes, well, I'm very glad you've said sorry. I'm very proud of you for doing that, but you need to think, Leanne. Yeah, well, I'm sorry too. Come on, no tears. No, I won't tell Daddy. Yes, you can go to the city farm.
What? Honey, well, I'm sure you can make the shard in the garden just as well as in the bedroom. Why can't you make it in the garden? Well, if it keeps falling down, you can just put a stick in it, can't you? Don't worry, the people can move around the stick and it can support your building at the same time. Yes, that's right. Exactly like a lift shaft. Do I get a kiss? Not even one. Thank you.
Belief is an incredible thing. I went away with a vague, fuzzy candy floss interest in getting a career in media. Stroke TV, stroke creative industries, stroke celebrity life coach. But when I came back, all this guffler coalesced into an intensely focused, laser-like ambition to be a development executive in documentary filmmaking. Where this general leaning to do something in that direction had come from, I've no idea. There was nothing in my background that's just anything like that. I mean, where I was brought up, that was just not what people did. But now I was just desperate to get into that industry, and after 6 months trying to scrabble my way in like a rat in a chip shop, I'd finally managed to get an interview for a job as a development executive's assistant PA. Now, a development executive is the person in the filmmaking process who doesn't ever get to do any actual filmmaking. There's someone in the room whose name the real creatives can't quite remember. They are the first stage of the rocket. Unglamorous lumps of metal doomed to be jettisoned mere seconds after liftoff, left to tumble down and crash into 1,000 pieces in the Nevada desert as the really interesting stuff shoots off into the cosmos. And let me be clear, this was not an interview to be a development executive. It wasn't even an interview to be a development executive's assistant. It was an interview to be a development executive's assistant's PA. And I wanted it so bad. I wanted nothing on this earth more. But when I walked into that room to see all those people waiting, those young, talented, fop-haired boys, or those super smart young women who look like they'd grown up riding horses and quaffing wine, oh my God. So as I gave him my name, maybe to mask my fear or whatever, I kind of joked a stupid little joke. Wow. And I thought I was special. And this receptionist looks at me like I just cupped a fart in front of him and asked him to smell it. And he says, "This is day 5. I had no chance. I was dead. Which by then, for me, had become an interesting place to fight from. So when my turn comes and I'm sat there in front of the most bored woman on the planet, a woman who is a legend, by the way, a woman who has spent 25 years in the most dangerous, difficult places on this earth, documenting all of the awful, appalling, terrifying, shocking, surprising, beautiful and generous things that human beings do to other human beings. But who now looks like if she hears the word passionate one more time, we'll scoop out her own eyes with a fucking melon baller. Well, I knew I had to get creative. She's peering at my CV on her desk like it's one half of a rat.
And what is it that you have that all those others out there don't? Talk about direct.
All or nothing, so I just said, well, at least with me, you won't have to worry about where to park my fucking horse. And just for good measure, just for good fuckity fuck, I hit horse, like, you know, horse. And she looked up at me and pissed her pants laughing. And that laugh, oh my God, and I just thought, I want to work for you more than I want to live. If I walk out of here without that job, I will shoot myself in the face. So I said, I might as well tell you, there is no point in looking at that CV because it's all a pack of fucking lies. Her smile fades. She's still curious, but the second fucking might have been too much. She's not a clown. She's not going to be played.
Explain.
Deep breath. You asked for a minimum of 2 years' experience, which means being a runner, which means working for free for 2 years, which means a mother and father that can support you while you don't get paid, which I don't have and will never have. She's staring at me like a psychopath weighing up which ear to slice off first.
No one's going to give you a job in this business without that. You do know that, don't you? That is how this works.
And I just keep staring at her, hoping that she hasn't noticed that I've started crying inside, because actually what she said is the truth. And I know it's the truth.
I'm curious, then. How do you plan to surmount this insurmountable problem?
Well, I'm going to keep coming into rooms like this, amongst people like that, writing lies like those till it works. I will keep banging my head against the wall until the wall breaks, or until my neck is a bloody stump. It is generally not advisable in an interview to use the phrase until my neck is a bloody stump. Generally. I got the job. Belief. You see, I never really had that until I met him. I was too scared. Back then, I just dipped my toe in, constantly trying to figure out the temperature of life before eking my body in millimetre by panic millimetre. Even going abroad, my great journey into the unknown came out of fear. The dread of being given the gift of life and then spending the next 70 years on the sofa in my pyjamas eating crisps and watching Broadchurch. But when I whispered my little secret hopes to him, these tiny, precious blasphemies that I could actually do something, he'd terrify me by saying, why not? Other people do it, why not you? You can do anything, look at you. You see, the thing about him was he was a doer. Want to know what he was up to in Italy? He had a business importing French and Italian antique wardrobes into the UK. Now, his background, not dissimilar to my own, maybe a bit more, but there was nothing in there that pointed to antique wardrobes. I mean, his dad did accounts for a car showroom in Bromley. But he'd been on stag do with some mates in the south of France, and where they were staying, this wardrobe gets delivered. Huge, beautiful, big old farmhouse thing it is, but it's never going to get in the door. An hour later, this tiny old fella with a rubber mallet turns up, and without even taking the roll-up out of his mouth, he steps inside, knocks here, bangs there, and suddenly it's planks. He takes them inside. Minutes later, he's walking out, leaving the thing looking absolutely perfect and still smoking the same roly. And he's watching this, and he just goes, I'm going to sell those. And he does, for a fortune to all those rah-rah shops in Chelsea, and his business is born. That's his doing thing. Our love was intense. Actually, it was insane. I'm sure I don't need to explain. I'm sure you've all been through that at least once. I hope so. I mean, if not, what the fuck have you been doing? I mean, if you haven't felt that way at least one time, then break up with your partner immediately. Just jack them in. Do not waste this. And I'm not saying the insane part lasted forever. God, no. In fact, thank God, no, you can live like that. But it was there. We had it. I had to make a conscious effort not to talk about him because he was the only subject I was really interested in. I was obsessed with his hands. He was a big guy, a lump of a man, which I have to say I liked a lot, but he had these ridiculously articulate hands like they'd been sewn on and belonged to a surgeon or a concert pianist. And he was funny. Not quite as funny as me, but he was fine with that, which I also love because a lot of men, especially the smart ones, they just cannot not be the funny one, even if they really aren't, but he was fine with it. The sex was outrageous. I mean, fucking hell at first. Oh my God, we were mental. Real gold medal stuff. Pleased as punch with ourselves we were. Then we sort of calmed and, you know, that was fine. It wasn't like a panic, like, oh shit, we haven't done it in 3 weeks. What does that say about us as a couple? We were just fine. I don't know, I think we just knew that this thing we were having was about way more than the bit where we rub parts of our bodies against each other. I hated his family. But so did he, so that was fine. And I'm not going to talk about mine. He loved my new job, by the way. Loved it. He was always going on about it to his mates and the lads at work, his boys. Yeah, he was a bit like, look at us. I suppose he was a bit, well, a bit showy. Like, look at my perfect family. Look at my partner. Look at what she does. Look at us. But fuck it, do you know what? I loved it. I did. I loved it because he was proud. He was proud of us. He was proud of... Well, he was proud of me. I did do one thing that was a bit... He had this friend, this female friend, Emma. And it's not that I was jealous, because first off, that's not why I'm like, I don't do that. But the moment I met Emma, I just thought, no. Not this. This is not on. No way. And it wasn't a conscious thing. It was just somewhere deep within my gut. It was just there. So I... Now to say this or that, then, I destroyed their friendship. There I did, and for no real reason, but I wasn't going to have that. And it wasn't dramatic or anything. I didn't make up lies about her or stalk her or frame her for a crime she didn't commit. It was just a general chipping away. A change of mood when she turned up, the old filthy look and disapproval of just making things more awkward and unpleasant, and in the end, well, these things mounted up and they just fell away from each other. Drifted. And I do feel bad about that, because she was actually a lovely person. You know what's odd? I think he knew. And I think he liked it. When I found out I was pregnant, I knew this was bad. So by now he's doing really well. 12 lads working for him, 3 vans and a warehouse. And I kind of knew he didn't want kids. We hadn't talked about it, but I just knew. I mean, fuck it, you know, don't you? And what was hard was that I had started to want it. Badly. Because of him. Now that his child was in me, I wanted it so much. When I actually said the words, it was like the stuff that his muscles were made of suddenly became liquid. He started wobbling. Just gently wobbling, and then he sort of folded down. He just concertinaed down onto the sofa, collapsing in on himself, crumbling. And then he starts to shake. Like the fear, the not wanting, the no, no, no is so profound. It's actually coming out through his muscles. And as I stood there watching this, I decided there and then to have an abortion. I was going to get rid of, well, of my child. Because in my mind, it had already become a child. For me, it was now definitely a child. And a child I had started to want. But I was going to kill it. To keep him. That's how intense this was. And slowly, he looks up. And the grin on his face is huge. And I realize he's fucking laughing. This twat is laughing like an idiot. He's laughing his big, beautiful, idiot head off. And we're both just standing there laughing.
Danny, what were you thinking? It's broken. It's completely broken. You broke into 1,000... Why would you do that? Why would... Leanne, stop crying, please. You've broken it into 1,000 pieces. Why would you do that? What? No, it's not better like this, is it? Because Leanne worked really hard on that. She went to a lot of trouble in her pottery class and now it's in 1,000 pieces because of you. She spent nearly a whole week making that dinosaur. What? Oh, I thought it was a dinosaur. Right, well, she spent a week making that chicken and now you just... How? How is it better like this? No, it does not mean there's more chickens. It means there is one chicken that is in lots of pieces. It's really, really naughty. You have written, Leanne, all right, please just stop that because it's getting a bit... Why? I want to know why you did that. I want to know why you smashed your sister's work. Because I'm trying to understand why you do these things. I know you love your sister, so why would you do something like this? I beg your pardon. Leanne, stop that, please. It's not helping. What did you just say? How is it funny? Don't say it's funny, because that will really... Danny, if you start laughing, there is going to be a lot of trouble. Do you understand me? Leanne, please. Because, to be honest, darling, you're being a bit of a baby now. It's just a clay chicken. It's not the end of the world. Yes, I know it's the end of your chicken, but I think humanity is going to find a way to soldier on without it, don't you? Stop laughing. Now, I want you to apologise to your sister, and I want you to promise you won't break anything else she makes. Yes, you do have to promise. Because I said you have to promise. What? Yes, a promise is still a promise when someone else makes you do it. And look, I'm not getting into a philosophical debate with you, Danny. Apologise to your sister and promise you won't break any more of her things. And... Right. Thank you. And I want you to keep that or there will be serious, serious, serious... consequences. Do you understand me? Consequences means trouble, all right? Okay, right, it's over. So, Leanne, the waterworks, maybe? Because he said he's sorry, so, you know, let's all move on with our lives. Because you're beginning to be a bit annoying. He said sorry, it's over. What more do you want? Well, I'm not going to punch him in the face, and I don't think you would want that, so... No, I do not treat him differently from you. No, I'm not a sexist. Do you know what that means? You are going to be going to your room very soon, young lady, if you do not... Leanne? Leanne?
I think a lot about violence. Not because I want to or anything, I just think it's such a fundamental part of our species that how can you understand us without understanding it? Cows don't live violent lives. Unless it's something eating them. And even carnivals, yeah, there's a lot of hunting and chasing and rending, but war? Murder? Torture? And please don't misunderstand, I'm not negative about us. I think we're incredible. The things we've done, the things we do. I mean, if I collapse right here, right now, I will be looked after. People will do that. Strangers will do that. And then there's this whole system in place out there that will kick into life just to keep me breathing. And that system is there to help me if I get robbed or lose my job or get attacked in the street. And God knows it is not perfect. God knows it has been neglected and degraded, but it is there. And we did that. We had the idea, we created this incredible thing called society just for this purpose, just to keep us alive and stop us hurting each other. Sometimes I would look at him and think, you're a father, a husband, a man, and you've reached a certain age, and you've never had to kill anyone. You've never had to defend your home, you've never had to flee into the mountains with your family, you've never had to destroy another human life. At what other time in history could that be said? In other parts of this planet, that's happening right now, but here, in this bubble, it is not. And isn't that some kind of miracle? And you look at these fucked up ideologies and you think, how come they manage to be so proud of that? And we walk around being so ashamed and cynical about this. And in a way, how dare we? I mean, how fucking dare we? I rose quick. I didn't expect that. That was a surprise. Like, I reckoned before that I might be smart, but I also knew there was a good chance I was just an idiot who could talk. But now, I discover throwing myself at things. I'd find myself in a room with these people, these filmmakers, smart, driven fuckers, and every one of them always spoke way better than me, was way more coherent, way better educated. And I'd get paranoid and quiet for 2 minutes, and then I'd think, shove it up your balls, and I'd boulder in. I would actually think that, by the way, that exact sentence, shove it up your balls. I have no idea why. It's such a stupid thing to have as your battle cry. And if it was a woman, I'd think, shove it up your flaps. I think I like the vulgarity. I think I use the vulgarity to get me over the top or something. These were the good times, when everything just felt right. I mean, we had difficulties, arguments, of course we did, sometimes proper intercontinental ding-dongs, but nothing couldn't get over. He used to get frustrated at stupid things, and I found that really funny, like not being able to open stuff, and I'd be in fits of laughter. I mean, why can't you open a packet of cornflakes, for Christ's sake? I was always, always asleep before him, and always, always awake before him. I think I just found him very comfy. I'd not ever found anyone else that comfy. I'd lie on his shoulder and bang, that was it, I was out. And then he'd watch TV or read, so there was this whole part of our night that I wasn't party to. But in the morning, it was my turn. If it was before the kids woke, I'd just mooch in bed or just watch him. Sometimes he used to talk in his sleep, but really lucid while making absolutely no sense. And I used to love that because I could talk back to him and he'd reply. But just this weird gibberish, and I could keep it going for ages. So he'd be like, because I put them in the back. And I'd be, what did you put in the back? Those animals. What animals? Those animals have got the things on them and are going to the cricket. The cricket? Yeah, it's a game with balloons and there's keys there as well, but I don't think the keys are falling. I mean, what? And this had gone for ages, and then his eyes would just slap open, and he'd be like a rabbit at the headlights for just a second or two before he realised that he'd see me and know instantly what I was up to and call me a bitch and roll over, and I'd just crack up. At weddings, someone always fancied him. Always. He looked good in a suit. And sometimes they'd get flirty with him, and occasionally, just occasionally, he'd flirt back. The prick. Yeah. He had a bit of an eye for the ladies, which was fine. I mean, we all like a look, right? So, whatever. I remember this one huge row. It was about a mass shooting, of all things. An American one. And in fairness, this was a really bad one. One that you'd remember if I told you everyone was watching this thing unfold. It was horrific. And so we're watching this, and he's venting about gun control and Congress and whatnot, and we're talking and we're watching. Of course, the 24-hour news cycle, it's pain porn, you know. And I find myself saying, why are we all so shocked? I mean, it just seems to be a thing that we do, this incomprehensible violence thing. And then I'm talking about those lads who blow themselves up for Islamic State, or prison gangs, or football hooligans, or Ukrainian nationalists, or family killers, or Viking fucking ravishers for that matter. And isn't it all part of the same, well, male impulse? Because in general, they are all, in general, well, male. And he is just outraged. I mean, just outraged. How can you say that? What kind of person says people are dead? You know, all of that. And I'm just like, fuck you. Huge row. Just huge. Over something so... And I don't think it was the male thing. I don't think he was offended because of that. I think it was more of what it might have looked like. Does that make sense? Like my dirty little thoughts polluting our perfect nuclear family. Infecting it with a darkness that it should not have. And that genuinely upset him. It genuinely did. When Veronica announced that she was leaving the company, oh, shit. 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 I didn't want to use her real name. Fuck it, you know who she is now. When Veronica, the woman who interviewed me and who owned the company, announced that she was leaving, the place went nuts. It was like this gossip clown just descended, and it wasn't actually because she was leaving. See, she'd sold the company to a larger company for a stinking fortune, and part of that deal was that she stays running the place for a certain amount of years, and those years were ending. And meanwhile, the larger company had since been sold to a huge company, which had been sold to a colossal company owned by a well-known media baron who owned everything in the world except the shoes I am currently wearing. So we all expected that once she was free of the contract, she'd be off. She'd set up on her own, and it was only a matter of time. What we didn't expect was that she'd adopt a child and get out of the business altogether. No one expected that. But that's what she did. 52 years old, and she adopts this beautiful, beautiful little girl and gets the hell out. You should have heard what people said. The shit people say. And I just thought, you fuck it. You know, the judging, men and women, by the way, the judging. First you snide about her for being tough. Then you snide about her for being tough and childless. Then you snide about her for getting a child. It was disgusting. She only mentioned it once to me. Like, we were in the middle of a meeting, just me and her, and suddenly she looks up at me and says, I know what they're saying about me. And I was shocked. But with this woman, you didn't deny, you didn't not tell the truth. So I said, does it bother you? And without even blinking, she comes straight back, yes, but not as much as living my life unhappy. And I just thought, you are now and you will always be my hero. But in amongst all the turmoil, there was this colleague of mine, Liam, a mental little bundle of energy from Northern Ireland, looked like he was 15, talked like he had ginger up his arse and laughed like a hyena being tickled. He was great, Liam. I loved Liam. And we worked on some stuff together and it had gone really well. Well, we sort of found ourselves talking about starting up together. A company. Me and crazy Liam. The idea just sort of grew into existence. It just emerged from the void. And look, we were just talking about it. I mean, who the fuck were we? But talking about it led to pondering about it, which led to finding out about it, which kind of led to preparing to actually do it, which seemed utter batshit loop-de-loop, because who the fuck were we? So when I took this idea home and tentatively broached the subject with the father of my children, perhaps half of me was hoping he was going to say, are you mad? Now, in this climate, with two kids, what about the two kids? But he was just bang on it. No hesitation. Do it, do it, do it, do it, do it. That was him. And this hadn't come at the best of times, by the way, because his business had hit a patch. Things were not hard Exactly, but there was a change, I suppose. Trends or people going for fitted or modern or something. But he just said, do it, do it, do it. So I did it. What came as a shock was that the doing of it wasn't actually that difficult. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying it wasn't hard work. Oh, Christ, me and Liam worked so hard. But it was never actually difficult. So you get into some situation like finding premises or negotiating residual rights with Central American distributors and your brain would scream at you, what the shit do we do? But then you just figure it out. You didn't need some special something, you just figure stuff out. This was a surprise. And you begin to realise that the terrible secret of all human endeavour might just be that it's not really that hard. When you get right down to it, and all those people running those multinationals and getting tens of millions a year, yeah, they work hard, but who doesn't? You do. You work as hard as them. They're not special. No one's special. We're all just weird-looking chimps. Not that we were getting tens of millions. We were broke. I mean, Jesus, Liam and I spent 6 months banging our heads against a massive wall of who the fuck are you? Then suddenly, this film, this incredible film, just lands in our laps. Out of the blue. BAFTA-winning, Oscar-nominated director making a film about the rise of the far right in Europe. And she's had a terrible time with a bunch of producers who say she's difficult and, yes, male producers. And one day she walks into our office and goes, I hear you two aren't complete cunts. I want you to make my film. And we did. We made it. And it worked. And everything changed. Suddenly doors open up. Suddenly people wanted us. And because our tastes were so varied, we were able to do wildly different projects. So while making a film about corruption in the American military industrial complex, we were also able to do one about turf wars between ice cream men in South London. It was a mad time. And we just rolled with it. Like part of you was thinking, what am I doing? Is this me doing this? Me? And another part just goes, ah, bollocks, have a go. And you know what? I was good at it. I was really good at it. I always remember this one project, which was just so... Basically, it was all about this bizarre, obscure academic who for the past 25 years had been working at a system that would make it harder for men to gain power. The whole thing was based on one underlying assumption, that society has been created for men. To enable men, to empower men, for men to run and for men to tend. And yet any objective look at our world would have to conclude that men are, in general, absolutely cocking awful at being in power. In general. So we worked out this entire thing where, depending on how much damage you could do in the job, it'd be anything from 10 to 95% harder for a man to get the position. And it was in all aspects of life, politics, business, military, the arts. He had classifications in place for local councils in the American South or organised labour movements in sub-Saharan Africa. I mean, the detail. And he partnered up with a statistician and they spent years on this. So we're thinking, great, what a lovely old nutter. This'd be a fun one. BBC Four at the weekend, late night, you know. But the funny thing was, when you went in to talk to him, you kind of start believing. Like you go in thinking, what dingbat is he going to come out with today? And you come out thinking, so, when are we going to implement this? Or you go, look, women in power, not always good. Margaret Thatcher, Queen Isabella of Spain, Katie Hopkins. And he'd reply, yes, I will take your Margaret Thatcher and I will raise you a Pol Pot, a Stalin, a Franco, a Genghis Khan, a Vlad the Impaler. Or you say, what about where that testosterized aggression is useful, like the stock market? But the statistician would whip him with a bunch of statistics showing that if you took into account all the time those Wall Street boys fucked up, as well as succeeded, it was really no better than flipping a coin. I mean, it was interesting stuff. Only slightly marred when he tried to cop off with me. I mean, he was 73. 73! And Catherine, our 18-year-old researcher, was right outside. I said to him, what are you doing? You're 73. And Catherine, our 18-year-old researcher, is right outside. And do you know what he said? Why not invite her in? Dirty old fucker. We didn't get to finish that one. Funding fell through and then, you know, he died. 73. God love them for trying, though, eh?
Right.
Okay, look, please stop. Not together, because I can't hear.
Right.
All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to play for 10 minutes, and then... No, 10 minutes, because Mummy's very tired. No, I'm not always tired. Don't say that. I'm just tired now, so... No, not 20 minutes, 10. No, not an hour. 10 minutes. I said 10 minutes, and we're doing 10 minutes or no minutes at all, so which do you want? Right, good. Okay, so what are we going to... Okay, stop. What are we playing? Well, playing War and playing Architects are two very different games, aren't they? All right, no, peace. Please, let's try and keep the peace. Here's what we're going to do. First, we're going to play Leanne's game, and then we're going to play Danny's, and we're going to do it for an even amount of time. Stop shouting, please. No, Leanne's first, because I said so, and because she's the oldest, and then yours, and that's it. Please. Okay, right. Leanne. Architects, let's go. Right, so I stand here then, do I? Oh, excuse me. Well, if that is the biogas storage facility, I definitely don't want to step on that then, do I? And who's Danny then? Okay, good, the carpenter. Danny, you be the... No, darling, you haven't got a gun. Carpenters don't have guns. Well, we'll do yours in a minute. This is Leanne's. And what does I have to say? Is this all up to code? Right. That's a bit American, isn't it? Well, I just don't think people say that here, do they? Oh, Chicago. Nice. So I say that and you're gonna... And then I just say it's fine, do I? Fill in a form and... And a passing grade. Right, got it. No, Danny, no anthrax, not in this game. No, it's not boring, and it's Leanne's game, so be nice. Right, here we go. Hello, I'm the building inspector, and I'm just wondering if this is all done to the proper Sorry. I'm just wondering if this is all up to code. Uh-huh. Uh-huh, okay. Right. Well, that is very good. I think I'm going to give you... Oh. Right. Yes. Sorry, of course. Oh, well, this is very good. Very creative. I very much like all this, particularly the oak cladding in the lobby. You get a passing grade. What? I don't know, I think you have to file it by 5 p.m. At City Hall. Okay, good, well that was a brilliant game, so... No, it's Danny's turn now. No, it's Danny's turn, and yes, it was 5 minutes, and look, if it wasn't 5 minutes, it really felt like it was, so, you know, let's all move on. Okay, so what am I? All right, calm down, Danny, please. Yes, I understand, you're a stealth bomber, that's great, but what am I? A what? A Death Star. Okay, all right, and what are you going to... Look, please calm down. Stop running, because that's... Chicago? No, darling, he's not going to bomb your skyscraper because... Oh, Danny, why are you bombing your sister's skyscraper? Well, can't you bomb another one? Or can't the terrorists be somewhere else? I'm sorry, honey, it's where the terrorists are. And what do you want me to... Right, so the whole planet, you just want me to... And what about Leanne? Who's she? Godzilla. She's Godzilla. Don't run so fast, Danny. Less screaming, please. Well, it's too late, honey. He's already bombing. Danny, that is a bit violent. I don't think all the people need to be burning. That's even worse if it's just their heads burning, isn't it? Yeah, but it's his game now. Yeah, I know, but he's just dropped a nuclear bomb and I've just destroyed the entire planet, so I don't think it matters.
Danny, that is enough. I don't think sending in the Taliban is very nice, do you? Leanne, don't start, because it's not even real. It's not even... Danny! Danny, please stop that. Danny! I know they're not here, by the way. My children. It's not like... I mean, it's not like I think they're actually here. I know they're not. I know they're not here. I know they're dead. I don't know why when I do this, there's always moments of conflict, like when they were being a bit naughty or I was not so great. I mean, it's my imagination, so I think I'll go for beautiful moments, like just sitting quietly with Danny asleep up against me and Leanne lying in my lap watching TV, maybe playing with her hair or something. Maybe it's because these moments happen just as much and they are just as important as other more. Or maybe I don't deserve yet or earned or something. I don't remember exactly when things with us started to go properly wrong. I just remember suddenly finding myself in it. Our arguments had morphed into something, well, brutal. We'd always argued, but there were places we wouldn't go, like some part of you was trying to protect the person you love most, even though at that exact moment you wanted to smash their stupid teeth in with a ball pin hammer. But now it was like a break had been taken off and you were careering down a hill and you just wanted to hurt. What you wanted them to feel was pain. He had become so moody. Sometimes it was like he didn't want me in the same room, like my presence was an offence, and his responses became diminishing, like everything he said was as if he was talking to a moron. It would be all, "I've just said," etc., etc., or "I've just told you," blah, 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 like a fucking capuchin monkey was trying his patience. I tried a mixture of reactions to this. Sometimes I'd be quiet and ignore it, and sometimes I'd let rip, flip out, really let him have it. And sometimes I even came back with positivity, like, "Oh, ha, 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 look at us." You know, "Ha, ha, this is really hurting me to the soft parts of my soul with electrified knives, ha, ha, ha." But the thing was, my reaction didn't matter. The response from him was always the same. It was always a quiet, barely concealed disgust. And at the same time, this all coincided with the general sprucing up of himself. Suddenly he was dressed in smart, wearing suits, even got his teeth whitened. Teeth? I mean, what the fuck? At the time, I just put all that down to the House and Garden Offensive. The House and Garden Offensive was what I secretly named his plan to save his business. You see, for some time now, things have been going from bad to worse, to awful, to, well, shit. Is this about to get serious? The trend for modern had continued and more of the shops that took his farmhouse gear were closing or diversifying. I kept waiting for him to notice. Because he's smart, right? But he just didn't seem to see, and if I suppose just hinted that something might be afoot, oh my God, the betrayal. So I kept quiet while a part of my mind was going, "What are you doing? What the fuck are you waiting for?" But then one night we were around his mate Jason's, who, despite being a rampant alcoholic and utter twat, was considered a genius. Couple of bottles of wine in, Scotch now disappearing, Jason lays it out, slurring, "You're barking up the wrong tree, mate. That's all over, dude." Dude. Such a twat. But he's actually listening. "You're a blockbuster, mate. You're a blacksmith after the invention of the motor car. You're selling fucking pages, man." And he's nodding and nodding, and this is really going in, and I bite back my desire to scream, "That's what I've been telling you for the last 6 months, dickhead," because this actually might be working. The next few days he's pondering. I can see it, pondering that wisdom dispensed on high from a whiskey-flavoured teat. And suddenly, he announces his plan. He is not going to do what everyone expects. He is not going to get out of the business or diversify or change. He's going to double down. He's going on an all-out war against the tide. He tells me about this trade fair And he's going to do it. He's going to get the biggest, most expensive stand. Fuck it, two stands jammed together right at the front as everyone comes in. And there'll be adverts, marketing, double page spreads in glossy mags. The House and Garden Offensive. I remember turning up on the first day, seeing that colossal stand staffed by 15 people, vast sums of money we did not have sunk into its design, and thinking, what in God's name have you done? I mean, it was just so wrong, so misguided, misjudged. In amongst all that mid-century modern, people were actually walking around it. Like it was disease, like it was a corpse or something. That night I woke at 4 a.m. and he wasn't in bed, and for a second I didn't know what was going on, and then I saw. He was sat in the chair, just sitting in it, still in a suit, staring at me. What are you doing? He says nothing. Are you all right? Nothing. Well, what is it? Again. Nothing, nothing at all. He just keeps staring at me. What are you doing? Why are you staring at me? And then he just gets up and walks out the room. The kids reacted differently to all this. Danny was 4 at the time and he didn't even notice, which I was grateful for, even though some part of me thought, Jesus Christ, come on. Leanne was the opposite. She picked up on every slight change of temperature. No matter how hard you tried to keep it from her, she knew. And she took my side 100%, which I did not want, but she became protective of me. Her attitude towards her dad was one of constant rebuke. She even scolded him for his teeth whitening and newfound prettiness. She said it made him ugly. What was odd was it got to him. Like he cared for this little girl's good opinion of him in a way he no longer cared for mine. I'm, of course, just giving you one side. My side. There you go. That's what happens when you have just one person talking. I was definitely no angel. And let me be clear, this was hurting both of us. And in all honesty, I was a little distracted because, well, we were doing the festivals. And we had 3 films that we thought had a good chance of getting some awards. And that was exciting. I mean, it really was us getting awards. Our company, me, even. On November the 28th, I was in this all-day strategy meeting with these consultants we'd hired, and I came out, turned my phone on, and found 14 messages, all from him. His company unfolded. So the first one was in the morning, and he was saying the banks had scheduled an emergency meeting. The next one was just before the meeting, saying it was getting worse. Then it was one about lawyers, one about last-minute attempts to raise capital, one about receivers. A message saying I shouldn't worry because we wouldn't lose the house, which of course made me shit myself because I hadn't even thought about that. Then oddly a long one about his office desk and how he didn't want to sell it. He loved that desk. And then the last one was actually quite sanguine. He was even laughing a bit and he said, it was all over. He was sorry. There was nothing else he could do and he felt a bit relieved, but he was sorry. He was taking the lads out for one last drink so he'd be late, but he just felt he needed to be with the boys. And things start to make more sense. This last year, the moods, the suit, the teeth and the grooming. And I'd just not been there for him. I'd been wrapped up in me, my career, chasing. What a fucking BAFTA. I cancelled everything. Got in a car. Went to the warehouse to see if anyone knew where they'd gone, went to 3 different pubs. I even asked a complete stranger in the street, and eventually I found him. Standing at the bar, surrounded by his lads, the boys. And I walked up, and he hasn't noticed I'm there yet, but one of them does, and he follows his gaze, turns around and sees me. His wife. And the surprise. He didn't expect that. And I didn't even acknowledge the others. Didn't even say hello, even though I knew some of them quite well. I just went right up to him and I threw my arms around him and I just held him. I just held him. And he leaned down and he whispered into my ear so no one but us could hear. Get your fucking hands off me. And that's when I had my moment of clarity. That's when it dawned on me. The moods, the suit, the teeth, the grooming. That's when I knew he was having an affair.
Yes, hang on. I'm getting...